Hello, everybody, and welcome back to William SB Talk Sports, or whatever I'm going to call this that I still haven't decided on. Today, I have a special guest, someone I've met through the San Jose Sharks in the press box. I have Titus Wilkinson of Sport Radio Service and a bunch of other stuff. How's it going, Titus?
It's going pretty good, man. Thanks for having me on. Look forward to talk about some sports and thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you here. I mean, you were the first person I met in the press box, so eventually I feel like it had to happen.
Well, hey, I mean, yeah, that's pretty awesome that, here we are now, right? I mean, meeting up in the press box and now recording a podcast together, pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that was only 4 months ago or so. It feels like it's been a long time since the season started.
No, I mean, well, hey, I mean, with the Sharks, I feel like everything feels like a lot longer, so
Yeah, I mean,
it's
we've seen Sharks give up 10 goals 2 games in a row this season. We have seen them beat teams that they should definitely lose to.
that's true, that's true.
We saw them get a coach fired.
Hey, put that on the resume.
It's definitely been an interesting season. I will say, I think we all expected the Sharks to be bad this season. I don't know about this bad, but I mean, at least they're not last in the league at the moment, so they have that going for them at least. That still belongs to the Chicago Blackhawks.
Hey,
So,
I mean, that's something, right? I'll take that.
yeah, I mean, the only thing is if the Sharks want Macklin Celebrini, I feel like that extra few percentage points in the draft lottery could help when that comes up.
That's true. That's true. So, I mean, might want to rack up a few more losses. And hey, I mean, Chicago did just get Bedard back. So, I mean, they might start winning some more games again. I mean, Connor Bedard can single-handedly change the outcome of a game. So, might see them start getting a couple extra wins here and there.
Yeah, I think that's definitely going to be the case, especially when you factor in the trade deadlines coming up. And Chicago signed pretty much all of their pending free agents. So they don't really have anybody to trade, while the Sharks are probably going to get even worse.
I think that's a high probability that some guys are definitely going to get shipped off at this trade deadline. I think the interesting question will just be who, but we'll just have to see.
Hey, I mean, look at it this way. At least they have a GM in place, unlike a certain other bottom feeder team at the moment. thought we saw the other night.
That's true. That's true.
For those who may be watching this in the future, I am talking about the Columbus Blue Jackets, another team that I cover, that are having a bit of a rough go at things at the moment. As well, I was going to say as we saw in San Jose, but we didn't see that in San Jose. They walked away with a win with 12.9 seconds remaining in regulation. So,
Somehow, I mean, that was a pretty, that's a pretty in just crazy game. I mean, because it was just that first period was so wide open and just, chances going both ways. And then second period was kind of similar to that. And then the third, all of a sudden, it tightened up and it really looked like it was going to go overtime. And then the Sharks defense just decided, hey, let's just get Boone Jenner in the middle of the ice, I guess. And then Boone Jenner was like, oh, sure, I guess I'll take that. And then just skated right in and just tucked it home. So yeah, I don't know what was going on that last shift, but yeah, pretty wild ending to that game for sure.
so the person I felt bad in that game for was Johnny Gaudreau.
I know. Me too. Me too. I mean, how many chances he had? I mean, geez, Louise.
So he had one breakaway. He lost the puck, mainly because of a poke check by Kakinen, if I remember correctly. Second one, he hit the post. Third one, he missed the net all over the course of like 5 minutes. Then he scores a goal, gets it taken away because Boone Jenner was offsides.
I
He
mean,
was.
if yeah.
I went to the Blue Jackets locker room after that game, and he was a little bit upset about that. Felt like that
Oh.
was not a great night for him, but
Oh, I'm
he
sure.
did.
I mean, if that doesn't summarize his season as a whole right there. I mean, like that's yeah, I mean that's just how his whole season has been.
Hey, on the bright side of it for him, he did get 2 assists, so that's one positive, I guess. But
Got something out of it.
yeah, definitely not the stat he probably would have wanted.
No,
Were
no.
you Did you end up going to the Sharks locker room after that game?
I did. I did end up going. I only managed to. I just was there for Quinn, so I didn't get the Sharks players, but I did get did talk to Quinn.
I imagine Quinn was probably not too happy about the way that it.
No. Yeah, he was. Yeah, pretty dour mood, and I think he was. Yeah, in particular, just kind of upset about their defensive play, and yeah, just kind of how loose they were. And I mean, I think, there was definitely some kind of positive performances to see. I think for me in particular, I feel like Kalen Addison that game was, I don't know. I mean, from, what we heard from the scouting report coming over from Minnesota, he's the kind of guy who, is a solid like puck handling, puck moving defenseman. I feel like I haven't really seen that a ton from Kalen. And that night, actually, I feel like he was making some nice passes out there. I mean, he got 2 assists. So I feel like that was he definitely showed that game at least a flash of his potential and what he can do. So I don't know if there's any positive performance I got out of that. It was nice seeing him have some confidence with the puck, because I know he has the skills. It's just, I don't know, it's been certain times where it's just he just is kind of invisible. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and I think the reason the Sharks acquired him was mainly because without Carlson in the lineup, they were really missing that offensive presence in the blue line.
Right.
And I feel like Addison's been okay at it, but he hasn't been as advertised. I feel like the person who did it really well when he was up was actually Mukko Meduhlin. I feel like he was doing that pretty well, and I'd be surprised if we don't see him again here in the near future. But the other player who really impressed me in that game, and this ties directly into the trade deadline, would be Anthony Duclair, with his 2 goals. It's definitely the best performance I'd say we've seen from him as a Shark.
I agree.
And with his value, I don't know where it is right now, actually, because everybody knows how good he can be and what he's been in the past, but this definitely has not been a great season for him.
No, it hasn't. I mean, yeah, it's tough, right? I mean, just because you gotta think, obviously, his stats and his play has been affected by who he's been playing alongside of. I mean, obviously, like Granlund and Zetterlund, they've got skill, they have talent, but still, at the end of the day, I mean, it's got to be tough for Duclair. I mean, I think his stats have clearly seen a dip and an impact from being on the Sharks, and I mean, I think, yeah, like you said, the talent and the skill is clearly still there. I mean, those 2 goals that he scored against Columbus were really impressive, especially that breakaway move that he had. It's almost like a Kucherov that he pulled off with the little like no deke. It was pretty impressive. So yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, there's clearly still skill and talent there. I mean, I don't know. It'd be tough. It'll be interesting to see, yeah, what his value is at. I feel like for me right now, I don't know, maybe at best like a second and a, prospect or something along those lines, or I'm not really sure, but I think it might be a little bit lower than unfortunately it should be at, just because of, like you were mentioning, kind of his stats being down a little bit. But you're right though, that game really did, it really was nice to see him have a game like that, because we all know the skill and the talents there. It's just at the end of the day, can he do that on a consistent night in and night out? And I'm sure for him it's got to be tough, just because he doesn't have maybe the kind of guys to bounce off of consistently every night. So, but yeah, it was really great to see, because I like Duclair a lot. I think he's got a lot of skill. He's got a great shot, great speed, great hands. It's just, yeah, doing that consistently every night has been kind of tough for him.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, the Sharks didn't give up a ton to get him. So anything that they get is going to be a profit, I would say, as long as it's, well, I would say with Lorenz being in there and a fifth, I mean, I guess equal value would be maybe a fourth. So if they get a third or a second, I mean, who doesn't take that really after a year of decent performance?
I mean, I think that, I mean, you're right. Pretty much like mostly everything would be like, yeah, at least a return, like at least a net gain at the end of the day. And I think, looking at his contract situation, that will definitely also have a little bit of an impact on his value just because he only has 1 year, right, left.
Yeah, he's in his final year of his contract.
Yeah, so that so obviously, you know, very much a rental kind of piece, unless you end up, you know, negotiating some sort of extension, which I kind of doubt. I think that he would probably most likely just be a rental. But I think that also provides some flexibility too, right? Just because, you know, it's not like he's signed to some long-term deal. You know, you if the team that's acquiring him doesn't have to be concerned about that. They just know, like, hey, we're responsible for this 1 year of salary, and then we can move on from him if we need to after that. So I think there's some at least nice kind of flexibility there too.
Yeah, there definitely is flexibility of him. And realistically, he can make any team better just depending on what position they put him in. I mean,
right.
He's the type of guy, he has the skill to play on a first line with a star center if needed.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's what you'd want to do with him. I think he's better probably in the second, third line, maybe even fourth, depending on the way your team's set up.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he can basically plug and play in any situation on any team. I mean, I don't think you'd want him on the PK necessarily, but
right.
Pretty much like power play unit one, two, first, second, third, fourth line, whatever you need from him, he can kind of do it to a certain extent.
Yeah. Yeah. For me personally, the team I could see him going to, which is a team he's previously played for, would be the Rangers. I feel like I could see the Rangers potentially acquiring him for a rental just because, you know, they're trying to go on a playoff run. I know they're linked to Frank Vatrano and Anaheim instead, but if that doesn't end up working out, I could see them potentially looking at Duclair instead. I mean, I think that's kind of exactly a piece that they would need is a scoring winger. I think the Rangers really clearly want that, especially considering the, you know, state of Kaapo Kakko and Lafreniere being better, but maybe still not being the, you know, reaching the levels that everyone expected. So, yeah, I think I could see them definitely having some interest in a scoring winger like Duclair.
Yeah, and actually, those two names are interesting to me because I don't know if the Rangers would be looking to move on from either of them. But with Kakko, for example, being a restricted free agent with arbitration rights at the end of the season, maybe they want to avoid that headache. And obviously, I don't think Duclair alone would be enough to make that work. But there could be the framework for a very big trade that could work here.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think so. Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely been a lot of rumors flying around about, yeah, Kaapo Kakko and his future, just again, because he's been, you know, unfortunately, definitely a disappointment in New York. Now, how much of the disappointment is on him or it's on the Rangers? You know, sometimes it's kind of tough to tell, you know, if maybe the development hasn't been great. You know, the Rangers have struggled in the past to develop prospects, so they have a history of doing this. So, you know, it does raise some suspicions as to whether or not it's necessarily on Kaapo Kakko or the Rangers. But at the end of the day, I think he just clearly needs a change of scenery. I think I don't know what it is, but he just hasn't really fit in or worked out with the Rangers. He has shown some good, like, defensive, you know, responsibility. Like, he is defensively responsible, but offensively, he's just really disappointed in that category. And so I think that, you know, yeah, there's definitely some potential there for like a big trade where, yeah, Sharks get, you know, Kaapo Kakko, a guy who's young, he's got talent, he's got skill, obviously second overall pick in the draft. I mean, he's got the plenty of ceiling. It's just the question is, you know, would the Sharks be able to capitalize on it? I think that they have enough pieces where they could, but yeah, that there's definitely the groundworks for sure for a big trade like that. But I know the Ducks have a lot of interest in Kakko and potentially making a deal there too. So, you know, we'll see if the Sharks could try to squeeze in and maybe beat the Ducks to it before, yeah, they get to Kakko. But yeah, there's definitely some interesting prospects for sure that I would like to see the Sharks maybe try to make a push for and, you know, acquire for sure.
Yeah, it's kind of similar to what they're doing with Filip Zadina this season, which
yeah,
hasn't really gone to plan, I would say. He hasn't really shown much that is that impressive. I've actually been more impressed with the play of Ty Emberson out of the two pickups that we had kind of around that time frame, who I'm sure a lot of people don't really know too much about Emberson, but he's not going to be the type of player who you see on the score sheet very often, but he is
Right.
out there making a difference most nights.
He's definitely one of those guys that you're totally right, where you definitely have to be a little bit more into the weeds of the game a little bit. Yeah, you gotta look past the goals and assists and points and plus minus, and look more at the impact that he's having, and more the analytical side of the game. Because yeah, I think if you just simply watch for goals and points and all that, yeah, you might be like, man, I don't understand what this Emberson guy does. But if you really pay attention to his defensive abilities and sort of his responsibilities, I mean, I think that yeah, he has a positive impact. I think it just kind of flies under the radar a little bit, but. And I have heard Quinn a couple times mention, like how he likes Emberson's play, and so yeah, no, you're totally right. I think he has been pretty impressive this year, and for me, that was not somebody who I, to be honest, was anticipating making much of an impact. I thought he was just going to be, maybe a bottom, pairing defenseman, bouncing back and forth between the minors and the NHL. I know he had potential, but. Yeah, I didn't really expect this much from him, and man, so far, I mean, you gotta say he's really made a positive impact. So yeah, I'd be curious to see what his future is with the team and where he goes from here. But yeah, definitely a little bit of a gem there for Greer, for sure.
Yeah, and to put it in context, for those who may not be following the Sharks as regularly or anything like that, their goal differential for the season as a team is negative 95. Plus minus isn't the greatest stat, but when it's kind of outrageous, it helps. And Emberson, despite the team being a minus 95, is a minus two. So, there's only. Well, there's technically, if you go on NHL.com, there's two players who are listed above him. One of them is Logan Couture, who's played six games, so I'm not going to count him.
Yeah, that doesn't count. Yeah.
The only player who's above Emberson is Ryan Carpenter with a minus one.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
And speaking of those two, they are currently both have 9 points, right? And that's tied with the man who I feel like everybody thought was going to be the Sharks' biggest trade trip at this trade deadline at the start of season, Alexander Barabanov.
Oh, man. Oh,
For
Barbs.
those who are interested in the plus minus of it, so you have Carpenter 9 points minus one, Emberson 9 points minus two, Barabanov 9 points minus 21.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah,
Oof.
it's been a rough season for him. Honestly, he has less goals than Marc-Edouard Vlasic.
Oh, man.
It's not something I expected to happen this season.
No, yeah.
He also has less points than Justin Bailey, weirdly enough.
Oh, interesting. Wow.
Yeah, like who I feel like Bailey's been a good story this year, but we definitely want more from him. But I don't know what's going to happen to Barabanov at this point. I mean, he has a good track record. So far in his career, he has 103 points in 194 career NHL games. But when he's playing this badly, I don't know if anybody's going to say that's our guy.
I totally agree. I honestly, I'm kind of shocked with how bad he's been this year. I always liked Barabanov. I always, had high hopes for him, and I thought he was a good contributor in the when he was in the lineup. I mean, you look like you're pointing out, statistically, I mean, he hasn't been bad. You look at those previous couple seasons before this one, and he's been solid. He's a good playmaker. He's got a little bit of finishing too, shots all right. But I would say mainly, he's a good playmaker. He makes nice passes. But yeah, this year, yeah, it makes me wonder, is it just like a lack of motivation kind of thing? Does he just not like care? Like, I don't know. It's yeah, 'cause it's been tough to watch him out there, which is unfortunate because, like I said, I think he has skill, he has talent. I like his game. I just I don't know. He's been such a non-factor this season, and you know, for him, if he wants out, this is not the way to get out. You know, like you really want to, you know, put your best foot forward, and he really hasn't done that so far this season. So yeah, I would be shocked if the Sharks, would be able to get really anything for him. I mean, maybe if you're lucky, you could get like a, you know, a sixth or a fifth round pick. I don't know, but yeah, that would be at best like a late round pick, maybe, because his value is just got to be astronomically low at this point. I mean, sure, he's got the resume to, you know, he's obviously had past seasons where he's been a contributor, but when you've been this bad this season, I just think that, you know, I mean, you said it best. I mean, he's got less goals than Mark Edward Vlasic. I mean, that alone is like, wow. I mean, that's pretty incredible. So, and I mean, the fact that he doesn't contribute defensively either, because at least it would be like, if he's not scoring goals, it's like, okay, well, maybe he's helping out defensively, but I mean, he's not even doing that. So yeah, I mean, it sucks to see, because like I said, I think Barabanov has the skills, he's got the talent. It's just, yeah, this has been a pretty bad year, and it's unfortunate because I think the Sharks really could have used his help. I mean, obviously they need all the help they can get. So, you know, I think him helping out would have been nice, but yeah, I mean, he's been pretty much a non-factor this year. So we'll see if they can flip him for pretty much anything, or maybe he's a waiver. You know, somebody they try to waive. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, because I mean, it's. If he was on like a $1.5 million contract, they might be able to just move him for a low pick.
Right.
But at 2.5 with his performance level, I can't see anybody wanting to take that on at that point.
Yeah.
Just when there's so many other options. He does have one more point than Nico Sturm, to give him credit. But he's not, but Sturm isn't an offensive guy.
Right.
And I think that's what people don't really take factor into him. He's a defensive first forward. He knows that. And I mean,
and Sturm takes faceoffs too, and he's really good at it too.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to say is, I think even though Sturm has another year on his contract after this one, I wouldn't be surprised if the Sharks are getting a lot of calls for him just as a bottom six center.
Yeah.
Like if you look at what Tampa Bay gave up a few years ago for Nick Paul and how well that paid off for them.
Right.
If you're a team like Edmonton or even the Rangers, just to get some stability down there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't see why you wouldn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, most definitely. And I mean, you know, not only is Sturm, I would say, a good shutdown center, but he's got the, you know, playoff experience, right? Because he won the Stanley Cup with Colorado. I mean, I know, he wasn't a huge factor in that run, but he was an important contributor still. I mean, and so, yeah, I think any team who needs a guy who can win faceoffs, right, be a penalty killer, be a shutdown center, you know, those aren't easy things to come by, especially I would say the faceoffs. I think, you know, how good he is at the draw is a big factor for him. And I think, other, you know, a lot of teams, you know, don't have that. You know, it can be tough sometimes to find centers who are good at the faceoff draw. And, you know, when it comes to playoffs, you know, I think having a good faceoff guy is actually extremely important. I think, you know, people don't realize how important it is, but, you know, when you have a guy who can consistently win you the puck in your own defensive end, right? So that you don't have to spend time, you know, chasing the puck or in the offensive end, and then you start out with the puck. I mean, yeah, it's really a crucial aspect in the playoffs. So yeah, most definitely having a guy like Sturm can really change a lot for your team. So you're totally right. I think that I'm sure that there's plenty of teams that have interest in Sturm for sure.
Yeah, and the crazy thing too of him is he's having his best season from the faceoff dot.
Yeah.
He's 59.4%.
Right, which is, I mean, that's dominant. Yeah.
It is. I mean, look, give me 1 second here to look this up. I'm curious what Patrice Bergeron's numbers usually were about. I think they were a little higher than that, but I don't think it'd be that much higher.
No, yeah, I don't think they could be too much higher, because yeah, like 59% is, that's like in the elite category.
Yeah, I mean, most Bergeron's career average was 57.9, but his last 3 years, he had a 62.3, 61.9, and 61.1. So
Wow.
he's almost, Sturm's almost at that level. And I
Yeah.
don't think he gets much credit for that.
Right.
But
Yeah, no,
it's,
most definitely.
there is one player that the Sharks are trying to play, or sorry, trying to trade, that is actually playing worse than Barabanov. Do you know who I'm leading into here for this?
Somebody's playing worse than Barbara. I don't know. I'm curious. Who is it? Who is
Kevin
it? Yeah, there you go.
LeBanc.
There you go.
So if they're looking at a fifth or a sixth for Barabanov, I think LeBanc's just probably just not going anywhere.
Yeah.
He has a $4.725 million cap hit, which with a flat cap is impossible to move if they're playing well.
Right.
He has 2 goals, 5 assists, and 7 points in 34 games.
Yeah.
He's averaging 11 minutes per game. I don't know what happened to him.
Yeah.
Because if you look back 2018-19, when the Sharks were at basically the last era's final push, he had 17 goals, 39 assists, 56 points. Solid player. Even last year, he had 33 points, even though he was had his moments last year, he was getting scratched and all that. It's
Right.
just, what is he doing at this point? I mean, it's,
Yeah.
and
Yeah, I
here's the
mean.
other thing. I mean, just yeah, this before you go. So he's always been kind of seen as a power forward, I feel like, and just kind of, if he's not scoring, be physical, make an impact. Last year, he had 36 penalty minutes, which is low for a power forward, but he stays pretty clean for the most part. This season, he has 8.
Jeez. Yeah, that's a
So
drop.
go ahead and I don't, sorry for cutting you off there. Go ahead and go with your thought on that.
Oh no, you're good. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, you're totally right. I mean, as far as I mean, LeBanc has been, yeah, somehow even more of a disappointment. And you're right, I'm not, you know, it's honestly similar to Barabanov, where I'm not really sure like why, what happened, or like what the drop off is. For LeBanc, I wonder, maybe was it because, you know, obviously he had those 56 points in, you know, 2018, and you know that was kind of the last push the Sharks had. And so it makes me wonder, like, was part of those points coming from, you know, the talent that he had around him, you know, was that helping him? But then yeah, you bring up last season, he had 33 points, which isn't great, but I mean, at least it's, you know, better than what, you know, he's done so far this year. And yeah, again, it's another one of those guys where it's just, you know, a non-factor. You know, he's not putting up points. Okay, well, if he's not putting up points, then at least he's playing defensively well. No, he's not doing that either. So I mean, you know, and he's not particularly physical. You know, he's kind of a smaller guy, so he can't really throw the body around a ton. And so I mean, he has a good shot, and you know, sometimes I really wish he would just, you know, throw one on net, because I mean, he's shown before he's got a good shot. He just doesn't shoot it a lot for whatever reason. He just seems to be very passive sometimes, you know, dishing it off to somebody else, and it's like, man, just, you know, just shoot it, you know, throw it at the net. I mean, you know, what's the worst that can happen? I just, you know, I yeah, I don't really understand what happened with him. And I think it is funny, right? Because yeah, he obviously did the, you know, they wanted a change of scenery for him and everything. But I mean, yeah, good luck with that, because I really don't know. Because yeah, it's even worse for him, right? Because like you're mentioning with the salary cap situation, it's like he's making even more money than Barabanov. So it's like, how are you supposed to sell that to a team? I don't know how you could. So yeah, it's an unfortunate situation for LeBanc. I feel bad for him, because you know he's had those previous years where he looked good, but yeah, this season has been been pretty rough. And I think it's even worse, obviously, knowing that he's like looking for a change of scenery, and the fact that, I mean, in all likelihood, he's not going to get that change of scenery unless they waive him. But then even then, I don't know if anybody would want to pick him up. So yeah, it's definitely a tough situation for him and for the Sharks, in particular.
Yeah, I feel like anything that happens with him, his contract's just going to run out, and then if a team offers him a contract, he might end up somewhere, but more than likely, probably heading for the AHL, I would say.
Probably, yeah.
And realistically, if you look at the players the Sharks are going to have on the market, you have the ones we talked about, LeBanc, Duclair, Barabanov. You also have Mike Hoffman in there, but he's been decent, but $4.5 million cap hit. Is anybody going to want that?
Right.
The Sharks can only retain on one player.
Yeah.
So they aren't going to have much luck here. I mean, I feel like in terms of the forwards who are going to be on the market, they're probably going to get more out of potentially Ryan Carpenter and Justin Bailey than any of their actual top trade pieces.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, you're right. I think that, I mean, guys like Hoffman, again, I mean, just a little bit too much salary on him. And then, I mean, I'll be curious to see if, if there's any mark. I'm sure there'll be somewhat of a market for Granlund, even though he does have a little bit more of a cap hit. I think he's shown flashes, and he's had like kind of stretches of good play. So I think there might be something there where the Sharks could flip him for something. But you're right. I think that, Carpenter and Bailey, funnily enough, are, I sure, will draw more interest at the end of the day, just because they're cheap. They're, good energy guys, right? And Carper obviously has a lot of experience, and he's played in the NHL for a long time. Bailey is a little bit younger, so you can use him as an energy guy that you can hold on to and keep and use for the future, not just for this season, just because he's on the younger side. So yeah, no, you're right. I mean, those two guys, keep an eye on. Same with Sturm, it's at the end of the day, a lot of those playoff teams, they need those energy guys, right? Those guys that can slot into the bottom six, throw the body around, be physical, play good defensive hockey. They don't necessarily need them to contribute a lot offensively. All they need them to do is just be that catalyst, right, for maybe that game-winning goal in a big game where, they show up all of a sudden out of nowhere, because they're just kind of those energy guys, right, that they pop in those kind of clutch situations sometimes, and they could be the difference makers, I think at the end of the day, those guys are certainly going to draw some interest, rather than maybe those more, veteran guys, a little bit more cap hit that haven't shown as much. I think the days of Hoffman's, I think he's still got, some skill. I think his shot is still good, but I think his speed in particular his speed was never fantastic. It was decent when he was playing at Ottawa. He had some good legs, but now that he's getting more towards the, tail end of his career, legs aren't at, where they were, before. So he's even slower now, and now that he's even slower, it's hard for him to create chances for himself. So yeah, I think, at the end of the day, I'll be curious to see if maybe, a team like Tampa bites on a guy like Carpenter or Bailey, just because they need those energy guys, right? Those guys that can spark you in a game, that because they throw a big hit or, score a clutch goal or win a, face off that you need. So yeah, I think those energy guys might be the guys that actually might get you more of a haul than anybody else.
Yeah, and the only reason I didn't include Granlund in that list is because he does have one more year after this.
Right.
So there might be more interest in him in the summer, potentially, or even next year's trade deadline. But the way he's played, I mean, at $5 million, somebody might just say, you know what, let's bring him in and he can help us for the next 2 years if they have the money for it.
Yeah, well, and I mean, throughout his whole career, he's always been a power play specialist. I don't know what it is about him in the power play, but if you look at his analytics, no matter what kind of season he has, usually he's like good on the power play, for for whatever reason. I think it's just mainly just because he's a good distributor, good puck mover. But yeah, I mean, he's so, you know, if a team is looking for like maybe help on the power play, you know, maybe they need a special teams power play kind of guy. Yeah, Granlund could definitely fill that role, fill that need. So I don't know. Definitely be curious to see if there's any potential market for him. But you're right. It definitely might be a chance that they'll just have to sit on him and wait until the off season or maybe even next year. So it'd be interesting to see what ends up happening with him.
And then here's a bit of a little bit different topic, a little more off the wall of a question. So it's been almost 2 years since Tomas Hertl signed his big contract extension with the Sharks, which was one of the last acts Doug Wilson made as general manager, and now Greer took over. If you were Mike Greer, looking back at this, do you kind of wish Wilson had just traded Hertl and gotten assets in return instead of having this big contract and now just being this bad with the player who could probably be out doing something better somewhere else?
Yeah, you know, as much as it hurts me to say this, just because I've always loved Hertl. He's always been one of my favorite players to watch. I would say 100% that, yeah, I think Greer would probably hope, you know, looking back, you know, it would have been better for the Sharks just to trade him, just to get rid of him. I think, you know, it, as much as it hurts, as much as it sucks, I think that when Hertl signed that contract, I think he, you know, his value was really at its peak, maybe not at its peak, but it was still at a high point, right? You could have gotten a lot for Hertl. You know, you could have gotten a first, some prospects, maybe another player to fill in for him. You could have gotten a lot for him. I mean, at this point, now that he's in this contract that is very expensive, has quite a bit of tenure on it, I mean, trying to move him, frankly, would be, I mean, almost impossible. I mean, it would be really difficult to do any sort of move with him. So, yeah, at this point, he's pretty much stuck until something comes along. But, yeah, I think for Greer, yeah, I'm sure if he could time travel back, he'd probably tell Wilson, like, hey, you should just trade this. You know, you should trade Hertl. Don't sign him to this big contract because it's not going to pay off. Obviously, Hertl's still been great. I mean, he's still been a good player, but you just feel bad because it's like he's just kind of wasting away his years here in San Jose. You know, I mean, it was his decision, obviously, to re-sign in San Jose, so that was up to him. But I mean, at the end of the day, I think if you're looking back, I'm sure Wilson might want to do things differently considering where we are now, because who knows? I mean, maybe if we trade away Hertl, you know, at this point, maybe we're further along in the rebuild just because we have more prospects that we picked through getting Hertl or trading away Hertl. I mean, you know, so many different things could have played out in so many different ways. It's definitely that's a great question because, yeah, you're totally right. That was such a, you know, interesting final move for sure, to kind of cap off Wilson's legacy with San Jose. Obviously, you know, fantastic legacy. But yeah, certainly was it was quite the move at the end of his at the end of his tenure. But yeah, I mean, I think that at the end of the day, I think it would have been a lot smarter just to trade away Hertl, as much as it would have hurt, and I'm sure the fans would have been pissed when it happened, but it would have been the right move, I think, at the end of the day.
Yeah, and it is a very Doug Wilson move. I mean, yeah. Pay a guy a lot of money, give him a lot of trade protection for right. a long time until he's an old man. It's a very Doug Wilson thing to do. But,
most definitely.
And at that point, I feel like they were also expecting Carlson's going to be here for the next 6 years. We're going to re-sign Meyer. We're going to get Ekwin going up. We're going to get all these players slotting in, and we're going to turn around quickly, and that just never happened.
No, not even remotely.
So, I mean, it wasn't a terrible idea in theory. Right. But once it got to the point where it was either pay Meyer $10 million or move on from him, I think it was kind of clear what they needed to do.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. I mean, yeah, it's one of those, hindsight's kind of 2020 thing, but still I think even in the moment it was still questionable. I mean, obviously I didn't want to see Hurdle go as a Sharks fan, but I think that, deep down I knew that the right move would just be to move on. For I think it would just be beneficial for both the player and the team. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it happened. There's really no going back on that. So, and obviously, hey, still love Hurdle, and I love how much effort he puts out there on the ice. And I mean, he's easily the Sharks' best player by, a country mile. So there's definitely no arguing that. But yeah, definitely. Yeah, you're right. Big, big move. That's for sure. Very, very Doug Wilson move. Yeah.
Yeah, and then, like I said, this trade deadline is going to be interesting just because there's not really much the Sharks can do
Yeah.
because they have these pieces, but they would probably need to retain salary to move them. But
Right.
you already have two slots being used on Carlson and Burns for the next 2 seasons, at
Yeah.
least. Burns for two, you have four more for Carlson.
Right.
And then, of course, they also have buyout history that they're still paying for Martin Jones and Rudolph Spoelstra's.
He's
Not great,
no.
admittedly,
No.
but I think it's mainly that retained salary that's kind of killing them right now. If they had those three slots that they could use this season, they'd
Right.
be able to get a lot more assets than they're actually going to be able to get just because they can't really move anybody.
Right, yeah. I mean, yeah, their flexibility is yeah, limited so much, yeah, just because, like you're mentioning, yeah, just not being able to retain salary on pieces that you want to move, right? And that's the unfortunate thing is so many of the guys that they would want to move, you'd have to kind of retain salary on it. I will say though, I'll be curious to see what ends up happening with Kähkönen and Blackwood. I know Kähkönen has drawn quite a bit of interest. I know teams are definitely interested in him, and I think there's a lot of playoff teams that do have question marks in goal. So I would say that the value for goalies right now is actually a little bit higher than maybe it even normally is, just because a lot of playoff teams, really want a goalie. They want a solid goalie that they can rely on. Now, whether or not Kähkönen is that guy, I mean, I think he's played pretty well for the Sharks. I think he's maybe had games here and there where, it didn't look the best, but I mean, when you're playing behind the defense of the Sharks, it's like it's a little rough, so I think
Yeah.
that for the numbers that he's had, I mean, it's pretty impressive that he's been able to put up the kind of numbers that he has despite what he's playing behind. So yeah, I mean, I think Kähkönen could definitely draw some interest, and I think that they could get a surprisingly good haul for them. And I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, when they acquired Kähkönen, they didn't give up too much to get him. So it would be a net gain for them if they managed to get any sort of decent return for Kähkönen. And I definitely think they could, because there's a lot of playoff teams out there that are really desperately want a good goalie, and they are definitely willing to overpay for a goalie. I mean, look at the Devils, or plenty other playoff, like the LA Kings. I mean, they've had some question marks in goal. So yeah, I mean, there's plenty of playoff teams that could really use another goalie to add to their rotation. And we'll see if he can they can re you know manage to fetch a decent price for him, because I definitely think they could, for sure.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with that. Teams need a goalie. Not
Yeah,
many teams have one right now, it seems like.
yeah.
So it'll be
True.
interesting to see what happens there. And there's just a lot that's going to happen in the next few weeks, and it's coming up quickly.
Right, yeah. Yeah, not yeah, it's kind of crazy just to think how far we are along in the season. It feels like it's flown by, in certain aspects. In other aspects, it's kind of feel like it's dragged to certain parts, just because, Oh, I mean, let's be honest, it's tough when you're losing as many games as you are. And you're attending all these Sharks games, and you're just losing so many games in a row, it just starts getting kind of tough. But still, in a lot of ways, it has really flown by. And especially, I feel like once that All-Star break is over, it really starts just, flying. It's like the games just start going by so quickly, and then before you know it, you know, we're gearing up for the playoffs. So it's definitely going to start flying by here pretty quick. I know the Sharks have a decent amount of home games left here that they're going to be playing. So as a matter of fact, yeah, particularly the last month of the season, they're going to be playing quite a bit. So plenty of opportunities to catch them before the season's over. That's for sure.
That definitely is. And there's some other stuff we want to get to. So to end off this hockey section of things, apparently this is a trend that started in my last episode. I'm going to do a draft lottery simulation to see who wins it. So it has Chicago 1, Columbus 2, San Jose 3.
That honestly would not surprise me. Not in the slightest.
I mean, I guess they'd still end up with a good player, at least. You'd probably look at either Demidov or Yzerman, but that's definitely not what the Sharks would want.
No, they really wouldn't. But, I mean, with the Sharks' luck, I would totally not be shocked if they end up getting knocked down to third. That'd be very Sharks, having to pick third again. And
Or even worse, fourth.
Yeah, I mean, I could totally see that happening too. And I think if that happened, Sharks fans would be really upset. But I mean, that's the way the cookie crumbles. You know, sometimes you just get unlucky in the draft. But yeah, I mean, it's always worse too, right? I mean, when you have to suffer through a season where you're losing so many games, and then you get into the draft lottery, and then it's like, oh great, you know, after all that, we only get to pick fourth overall. You know, it's like, dang. So yeah, I could see Chicago definitely getting it again. I think it's just, you know, it's Chicago. I don't know why they seem to get those breaks their way, but you're right. They would still at least be able to get a good player. And yeah, I mean, I would like to get Demidov or Yzerman. I think both of those guys are pretty exciting players. So yeah, that'd be cool. Sure.
It definitely would be interesting. So yeah. Speaking of teams getting a break the right way, let's transition this over to where you were about a week ago now, I believe. So the time might be messed up. But you were at the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Definitely did not go how you were hoping, I'm sure. But tell me about that. How was that experience?
It was incredible. It was really an awesome experience. I mean, yeah, it's funny because I really didn't generally have any. I didn't know whether or not I was going to go. Right. Obviously, I've been working for the Niners all season long, but I had no idea whether or not they were going to be able to fit me into the schedule. You know, whether or not they're going to be able to get a room for me and everything. So I was, you know, kind of sitting on eggshells, and finally I was at work, funnily enough, one day, and I get I was on my, you know, 10-minute break or whatever, and I get like a text from the head photographer, who's kind of my boss, he was like, hey, like, you know, when you get a chance, call me back. And I was like, okay. I was like, well, this is probably it. This is the phone call where he's going to tell me, like, you're going or you're not. And he called me and he told me, he's like, yeah, you're going to the Super Bowl. And I was like, wow. I was like, well, that's like, I guess I'm going. And so that's pretty incredible. And then, yeah, that whole experience down there, I flew down on, I want to say it was Thursday. And then, yeah, stayed till Monday, you know, flew back Monday. And it was just every day obviously was super busy, super packed full of stuff, but it was, but in the best way, you know, it was, you know, constantly going to do super fun things, you know, helping out with like the Niners photo shoot that they did. Like, they did a team photo shoot and I helped to make that happen. That was pretty awesome. And then, you know, helping get photos around Vegas of like Niners apparel and things that they had put up in casinos. It was, you know, those days leading up to the Super Bowl were super fun, just because, you know, it wasn't obviously as stressful as the game. You know, you kind of just got to enjoy the experience a little bit more of just being in Vegas and being around all these fans. And I will say, you know, I mean, I think originally a lot of people were saying like, oh man, like it's just only Niners fans there. I'll give the Chiefs credit. There was definitely a decent amount of Chiefs fans there for sure. I think it was like, I don't know, it was tough to say like what the split was between Niners and Chiefs fans. I will say, like, I'll give the Niners fans the edge. I think there's definitely like more there, but I would say that there's still a decent amount of Chiefs fans that, you know, pulled up and supported their team. But and then obviously, yeah, the game itself was incredible. You know, got there super early. Funnily enough, I got bussed in with the 49ers cheer squad or their cheer team. So that was fun. so that was cool. That was a cool experience. We're just, you know, hanging out at the stadium, just kind of, I was probably one of the most nervous time, you know, probably the most nervous I've ever been just leading up to that game, just sitting in the stadium, you know, just trying to keep calm, you know, just because it was, I mean, you know, it's a Super Bowl, right? It's what you play for. It's, you know, what it all comes down to. And yeah, it was super nerve wracking. And then, yeah, obviously at the end of the day, didn't go the way anyone wanted it to. It was pretty rough. I was actually, funny enough, I 6 minutes before the game ended, I went down on at like field level, just to like get on the field quickly. And I had to wait till after the game was over to get on the field. And so I was waiting there. And so I only had like a slim view of the fields, but I was watching on the TV. Now, obviously, the stream of the TV is delayed. So I would hear the crowd first before whatever happens on the TV happened. And so like that last overtime play, you know, I looked up at the TV. I see the Chiefs snap the ball. But by the time that had happened, I'd already heard the crowd cheering. And so I look back and I just see Travis Kelce in the end zone with his like hands up, like he's celebrating. And I was like, oh man, I was like, that's probably it, you know, game's over.
Yeah.
And and so I looked at the security guard and they're like, yeah, you can go on the field. And so I went on the field and then they stopped me for a quick second. They were like, hey, like you actually got to wait for a quick second. And that tunnel, funnily enough, actually the Niners players were coming down that same tunnel. And so like they were coming, you know, obviously walking right past me. And yeah, that was pretty hard to see just like the looks on their faces, just because, you know, obviously they just look shocked. You know, they look like they didn't know what had just happened. And I think that's how all Niners fans felt. I think there was such a feeling of like, oh man, we might finally win it. Like, you know, this might be it. And then, yeah. And it just kind of all fell apart. So yeah, it was pretty tough to see him like that. And you know, I ran on the field to kind of like enjoy the you know, Lombardi trophy ceremony and everything. And but it was obviously kind of, you know, tough to enjoy just because it's like, yeah, you know, it's not your team getting to hoist it. So it was tough in a lot of ways, but still, you know, great experience and super thankful that I got to go, because yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it. You got your moment of Taylor Swift being in the same building, you know?
Yeah. did get that. I was actually, funny enough, when I was on the field for the Lombardi Trophy, I was not that far away from her and Kelce. Like, I saw him kind of like a little bit of a distance away. And I think I was just so angry in the moment. I didn't even really like it. Didn't even really register in my brain. I was just like, ah, whatever. It's like, yeah, you know. I was like, yeah, I guess they're there. But yeah, but it was kind of a funny moment looking back on it.
Yeah, I mean, not many people could say they've been probably that close to her. So
yeah, that's true. I mean, that's true. I mean, I think the coolest thing, honestly, was like, the Lombardi Trophy was like, you know, when they're handing it out, I was pretty close to it. I was like right there, and just being like that close to, you know, such a historic trophy was pretty cool. It was a pretty cool moment just to like see it that up close and personal. And I did, you know, shoot some photos throughout that experience. And so yeah, it was honestly a really weird feeling. It was like nothing I've really ever experienced, of just that feeling of like, you know, all the people around you are celebrating and are super excited, and then you're just kind of sitting there like, dang, this sucks. You know?
Yeah.
So,
it's, definitely one of those cases where not being a fan would have helped.
Yeah, if it was just a job for me, it would definitely help a lot, you know, just like being, because I could have kind of removed myself and just been like, well, oh well, you know, it happens. But yeah, I think the fan aspect definitely made it hurt a little bit more, because yeah, it's like, yeah, it just cuts a little deeper. But you know, hey, still at the end of the day, getting to do that experience was incredible. And I think for me, it was definitely one of those kind of things where, you know, if you're somebody who's getting into sports media and like getting into things like that, you know, a lot of this was all through just me meeting and talking to a lot of different people. So if you're looking to get into sports media and like things like that, you know, and definitely just make sure to try to talk to as many people as you can, get to know them and, you know, get their contact information, everything. Cause you know, you never know what person that you're talking to might help you get a job in the future, or, you know, you might just make a good friend along the way. So, you know, it's definitely one of those things where, yeah, I was a benefit of just, you know, just getting to know the right people and talking to the right people, for sure.
And that's actually a perfect transition. We are running low on time. I have maybe about 10 more minutes and I have to go cover the Blue Jackets game.
Okay, but, my bad.
Hey, it's all good. It's all good. We've had it's been a little bit longer on the Sharks than I expected, but hey, yeah. We had good info there. So that's actually a perfect transition, though, because somebody I met at the Sharks, as well as you, his name is Lee. He's the reason I'm going to be working with you covering the San Jose Earthquake.
Right.
So it's definitely going to be an interesting transition for me. I've never covered soccer. Admittedly, I've never followed a full season before. So this will be interesting to keep up on. And you had a fairly similar situation last year, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I kind of had that similar thing where, yeah, I was, you know, ended up covering the earthquakes through Lee. And yeah, it was one of those kind of things where when I was the first year I was covering them, I mean, I know a little bit about soccer, but I wasn't like super familiar. And yeah, it was definitely kind of getting a little bit of like getting thrown into the deep end, where it's just like you kind of have to just figure things out as you go along. And I will say, especially like because the press conferences, they do them virtually. And so usually like they make sure that everybody gets to ask a question. So I remember I was always so nervous for every press conference because it was like, I don't really know a ton about soccer. So I'll just like try to do my best, you know, like, this guy had a good game. Like, what'd you think about that? You know, or like things like that. So I was like, you know, just trying to figure my way out. But I mean, made it out all right. So, but yeah, it was definitely a fun experience for sure.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where when you are like in hockey, there are big stars who come through there, obviously, like the Sidney Crosbys, Connor Bedard.
Right.
But in soccer, there's such a bigger feeling with some of the players that come to town. Like, I don't know if I don't think Messi played in San Jose last year.
No, I don't think so.
But when that does happen, if it does happen, that will certainly be an occasion.
Yeah. Yes. That would be huge. And yeah, you're right. That is that's a story. That's a huge story on its own. Yeah. I mean, obviously the MLS has been trying to definitely grow the game a little bit. I think obviously soccer in the US has always been kind of a running joke of like people don't take it seriously in the US. Like, you know, it's kind of just like, eh, whatever, like they have it, but nobody really like cares. And so obviously Messi coming over to the MLS has made a huge change. So I think it'll be interesting to see what these next couple of years will be like for the MLS and if the game will continue to grow. I think it will. I think that, you know, if more stars start coming over like Messi, then it'll for sure start being taken more seriously.
Yeah, the biggest competition the MLS is going to have in that regard is definitely going to be the Saudi League that took Cristiano Ronaldo and quite a few other players. So it's interesting to see how well they can compete with that.
Yeah, most definitely.
Which I also wonder if that's going to start becoming an issue with other sports at some point as well.
Yeah,
I think it's probably less likely in other sports because most of them are so based in the United States that it would be hard to escape that. But it is definitely something to keep an eye on in the future.
Oh yeah, no, most definitely. Yeah, I mean, there's, I know golf has had some pretty huge impacts, as far as like guys leaving, the PGA and things like that. And so, yeah, and soccer obviously had a pretty huge impact from, yeah, Saudi and the league and everything. So, yeah, I mean, I think you make a good point that obviously a lot of other sports are American based, so it might not, be as easy for them to like transfer it over, but I still think that there's definitely, I mean, look, at the end of the day, if you got enough money, you could kind of bring over whoever you want. So I mean, if there's
Yeah.
ever a day where, like, yeah, I mean, maybe they start bringing over basketball players or, football players to try to create their own league, I mean, if you got enough money, you can definitely pull it off. So yeah, you're totally right. It'll be interesting to see, yeah, what the future holds there for sure.
I think Blackhawks fans will be good, happy to know that Connor Bedard is more than likely safe.
Yeah, I think they're good on that
Yeah.
front, thankfully.
But
Yeah.
yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting to see what happens this season, because not only do you have the earthquakes, I will also be covering Bay FC for the National Women's Soccer League. It's their first season. So I'm going to have to learn a lot about soccer, apparently.
Hey man, I think it's perfect though. Yeah, you'll be able to double dip a little bit, I think that'll only help you even more just learning the game and everything. And I think especially it'll be really exciting just, having a women's soccer team in the Bay Area. I mean, obviously I've had professional teams here in the past, but I think that this definitely has a lot of potential to be, just as big as the Earthquakes. I think that there's clearly a huge market for women's soccer. I think we've seen that. So yeah, I think there's a lot of excitement and hype for sure around Bay FC. So yeah, I think that'll be a lot of fun to cover, and I'm for sure definitely gonna try to make it out to a couple games just to see him play, I mean, shoot, they both play at the Earthquake Stadium, so yeah, it'll be definitely fun to watch for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be an interesting season trying to get going with that.
Yeah.
Luckily, there's not too much layover with the NHL season.
Yeah, not a
but
ton, but a little bit for sure.
a little bit. So it's going to be a hectic last month of the season and probably first month of next season. So
Yeah.
we'll see how that goes. But yeah, but I think that's pretty much all we have to touch on today. Definitely have to get you back on when we have a little more time to continue going in depth, probably especially as we get close to the end of the NHL season, we get going into the earthquake season and all that.
Yeah, most definitely.
So for anybody listening, go ahead and give them a shout out for where they can find you, your social media handles and all that.
So I would say for my Twitter is or I guess X, sorry, my bad. I still get tripped up by that.
I still say Twitter, honestly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so yeah, my handle is Titus W is me on X or Twitter, and then Instagram, I have my photography account, because that's I do a lot of sports photography, and that one is I believe Titus Wilkes Photos. So that, if you want to check out my photography account, I believe that's the handle for that. But yeah, those are the main two things, and then obviously sports radio service. You can find my game recaps and articles on there as well. Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining today, Titus, and thank you to everybody who's listening. And then we will see you guys all here soon. Music used is Feeling Good by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 4.0 license. More information in the description.